Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with Beans. As you all know, Friday will be Freaky Friday with Frank. Say that three times fast. But we have a lot to get to today. I did the second part of my series on military taxpayer-funded transgender surgery. This portion focusing on readiness, military readiness, and it has been a hell of a few weeks researching this stuff. And I have a lot to say and a lot to show you. So this show will change you, I think, in some way. And I hope you stick with me as we go through all this. But before we get into the world, we have this funny clip of this best man before his best friend's wedding. It's good stuff. Here we go.
For those of you that don't know me, my name is Chris Thompson. I am single. I am a pediatric surgeon at the Children's Hospital here in Winnipeg. And in my spare time, I volunteer at a pet shelter. For those of you that do know me, please keep your mouth shut about me. They say that you should never meet your heroes. Matt Olnick met me in April of 2006. When he joined the mighty Stoneleigh United Soccer Club. For those...
My husband's best man did a speech that was so touching and so great and reminded me of this. And I came across it the other day randomly on a YouTube channel of a family member, and I sat there watching my wedding videos just crying my eyes out, because we didn't have it professionally done. We got married in my mom's house. it was really something. Anyway, all that happiness to now go over this story. I want to talk to you about how I felt when I first got the call from the doctor from one of the military hospitals telling me that these surgeries were happening. I was super angry, really, really mad. Our taxpayer dollars funding transgender surgery for active duty military. That's gender reassignment surgeries. So that would be male transitioning to female, female transitioning to male, and all of the mental health counseling and everything that comes with it. You need to be enlisted for 180 days. You need to do a year of hormone therapy. You need to do a year of living in the gender that you want to transition to in your real life. And the biggest question that came from everybody that reached out to me after I published part one of that story, which will be in the show notes below, was, what about our military readiness? What about our fighting forces readiness if this is what we're doing? And so I started doing research into, I'm a military newbie. I didn't understand what the qualifications were, what the mental health standards were, what any of it was. So I took this on and I dove in and I did what I always do with every story. And I immersed myself in it. I learned everything that I thought I could learn. I read everything that I thought I could read. I talked to people in the military about their experience, what they did. At the end of the day, what I've landed on is that probably the most likely branch of the military for this to occur is the Navy, because of the training standards. Like, if you're going to Marine boot camp, you're not doing that only for the sole purpose of getting this surgery. You're not. Nor would you be able to. So from a readiness perspective, we're going to go through this. The U.S. government's providing gender reassignment surgery for active duty military. Everything in this thread, I said, should be viewed through the lens of military readiness. Could an active duty service member ever be combat ready based on DOD standards if they have gender reassignment surgery? No. Never. Not possible. Mm-mm. Certain behavioral health conditions require a waiver. This is the list of the conditions from the military's own documents. We're going to focus on number 8, gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria when diagnostic criteria and treatment plans should adhere to Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, 5th edition, the DSM-5, and current professional standards of care. Waiver submissions should include information on the condition, history, baseline symptoms of known disorders, the severity with and without treatment, and the likelihood to recur or deteriorate in theater if exposed to operational activity. And here's number 8, gender dysphoria when distressing enough to require treatment. Transgender without history of or current requirement for transition and not associated with significant gender dysphoria is not disqualifying and does not require waiver. Underlying behavioral health, endocrine, and/or surgical issues, as applicable, should be stable and resolved. And all service requirements must be met to include the involvement of and clearance by service central coordination cell if transition is required. Transitioning personnel's treatment course should be complete, preferably with DEERS marker change. What that means is changing the gender in the military system from what it was to what it will be or what it is. Quote, and an adequate real life experience period should have occurred to ensure stability. Due to complex needs, those requiring or actively undergoing gender transition are generally disqualified until the process, including necessary follow-up and stabilization, is completed. Many health professionals will tell you that the recovery for a surgery of this type takes 6 to 8 weeks. Most of the websites that I went to research this, the medical, quote, professionals, were all telling you that if you had this surgery in 6 to 8 weeks, you'd be cleared and back to work and all would be good. 1 to 5 days in the hospital, 6 to 8 weeks recovery, generally. After that, an active duty service member could be deployed, right? Wrong. I instead decided to stop relying on these documents and manuals and doctors and go right to the source. And I watched hundreds of videos. I'm not kidding. Of trans people telling their stories after their surgeries. And when I started this, guys, I was angry and pissed and judgmental of these people. And I know this is going to sound crazy. First of all, we know this is a multifaceted issue that is rotting our culture right now. Rotting it. Kids. But what is at the freaking core of all this? And watching through these, through the lens of military readiness, you will know without a shadow of a doubt. And this is just a small sample size. And we are going to sit through these videos together because that's why I did this. I didn't do this so that I'd have a little media to throw up on social media. I literally watched hundreds of these and picked these certain portions out and clipped them. And we're going to go through it together. First, we're going to watch this doctor. These doctors, to me, are not really doctors. I think that they're lost themselves. Because when I started researching these procedures, the procedures themselves, I got blasted with photos and I was reading manuals to understand how the surgeries were performed. I mean, when I do a piece, I want to know everything. I want to be able to speak to everything, or at least as much as I possibly can. I was traumatized by how barbaric and disgusting this is. We are born into these beautiful bodies that God made. And people in these situations are so lost and disconnected from God that they are brutalizing themselves. And these doctors are enabling it because either they're disconnected themselves or because they're evil.
So how much time is usually required off after male to female bottom surgery? This, of course, depends on the procedure. The most common procedure we do for transgender women is full vaginoplasty surgery. And usually for the majority of patients, that requires about 6 weeks off work, 6 to 8 weeks. You have to remember this is major surgery, so there is discomfort associated with it. A lot of patients will need pain medicines afterwards. Sitting can be difficult, particularly if you have a desk job. And of course, the other thing is you're learning to take care of your new vagina. So you have to do all that dilation, which is a big time investment and difficult to work during the initial few weeks as well. I have had some patients undergoing zero depth procedures go back in as little as 2 to 3 weeks. And again, that's because the maintenance for zero depth is obviously a lot less. But in general, before we lift all restrictions from you, and just what most girls require anyway, is about 6 to 8 weeks.
6 to 8 weeks off work, that's for a civilian. Well, a lot more goes into this for people undergoing this surgery. And after everything I've seen, none of the people that I have seen would ever be military ready. And I'll show you what I mean. I want to just go through this with you. I want you guys to all understand this because I think it'll change. Listen, this is a man who just underwent gender reassignment surgery to become a woman, which means that he is now going to have to do what we're about to watch for the rest of his life.
Is it more so the back of the dilator pointing more towards you? If ever you feel like a lot of resistance, I'll encourage you to sort of play with the angle of the dilator. So maybe coming up more, maybe going down more, so towards your head or towards the bed.
All right. So spread out as much as possible,
exactly.
Flat on the back,
mm-hmm.
Deep breathing,
you've got it. So what I'd like to do now is grab the mirror and just go over anatomy and then sort of talk through that. Do you feel comfortable with that?
Yeah, let's do it.
And so I'm going to pull this down, and you look amazing. And also, it's like, but it's going to be like 6 weeks is when the majority of the swelling and healing is going to happen, but it's going to be like a full year, really, before you see final end results.
And the stars here are gonna disappear. Right?
Yeah, everything's gonna fade.
Oh, some of it was done laparoscopically, you said.
Mm-hmm. So there's an incision like around the belly button. You also have a little incision here. And these are just really gonna heal up all on their own. There's absolutely nothing to do. So it has, you have Dermabond on top of that incision, which is basically like a surgical glue. So that's gonna, over time, just sort of flake off, but nothing to do there. And everything looks great. So I'm gonna raise your bed up a bit.
How's Sam?
He's good.
Okay. I want to see him too.
All right.
So.
You ready? Good at the beginning. And like I said, that will gradually go down.
Okay.
So I'm going to have you take your hand and hold on to the dilator. And we can help you with the mirror.
So you just have to move.
So first, just sort of point yourself to the dilator being there. Take some nice deep breaths in the beginning just to sort of prepare yourself and get ready. And as you're comfortable and ready, you can apply a little bit of pressure to the dilator.
This person in particular, after this segment of their video, requires a blood transfusion because they hemorrhage. So that's the beginning. Here is someone else who transitioned from male to female talking about their experience. This person is 1 month post-op. Pay attention to the comments they make about their mental health in this video. This is really important, guys, and you'll see why.
Four times a day dilating, 4 times a day douching, 2 times a day sitz bath, 1 time a day showering. And all of that takes anywhere from 6 to 8 hours. So you really only have about like an hour to an hour and a half between each session. And mind you, it does get quicker and it does get easier the longer you do it, and you become desensitized to looking at the surgical site, because let me just say, like, after this surgery, the vagina looks like, the vulva, the vagina, it looks like a massacre. Like, it looks disturbing. Keep in mind, this is a major reconstructive surgery on one of the most sensitive areas of your body, so you can't expect it to just be cute overnight. Like, not gonna happen. Even still to this day, 1 month post-op, it looks gross. And I'm gonna admit that. It's still swollen, there's still open wounds. They say it takes around 2 months for the wounds to fully close. And so I just cannot speak to the results of the surgery. I've had some minor complications so far, mostly just wound dehiscence from what I can perceive. And that's when the sutures or the stitches split open and the wound reopens. And so I've had that in some areas, and it's very not aesthetically pleasing. I don't know how that will affect healing in the long run. I really can't speak to the aesthetics yet, as I've mentioned, but I would say that dilating has gotten easier. I've definitely had some breakdowns in the early days, just feeling so trapped, because inevitably, when your day is consumed by these tasks over and over, repetitive, having to look at your surgical site and see the damage that's done and that you're trying to heal from, it's very mentally taxing. And so I definitely had some breakdowns, feeling like, I don't know how I can do this. It's so uncomfortable to dilate. I have to do this 4 times a day. I have to do this entire routine that consumes my life, and I barely have time to watch a show in between each dilation. So, but I'm finding my schedule now, and I only have 1 more week of 4 times a day, and then I can go down to 3 times for the next 2 months, and then it goes down to 2 times a day, which is in the morning and in the evening, and that's so manageable.
Okay. Military readiness. But there's more. There's more to this than that, and I'm gonna explain it, but we're going through this process together. It's very important. Here we go. Mental health.
I'm really looking forward to recovering and being at those later stages. This is definitely not a glamorous surgery in any way, shape, or form. It's really hard. It's difficult. It's not only physically demanding of you, but it is very mentally demanding. I would even say it's more mentally demanding than physically demanding in some ways. I still have some numbness in areas on the outside, and it's too swollen for me to know like what it looks like on the inside, so I can't really talk about that stuff yet. I do luckily have an appointment with Dr. Broussard. It's my 1 month follow-up, which is actually more like a month and a half follow-up from my surgery, because I elected to stay in Montreal during the first 2 months of my recovery, just so I would be closer to the clinic if I was having issues and stuff. So I'm thankful that I can go see him in person for that post-op appointment. I'm gonna ask him all my questions about the swelling, about the numbness, about the wound dehiscence and stuff like that. One of the most important things that I find post-surgery is keeping the area dry, since you have to dilate and use lubricant 4 times a day. That can create a very, very moist environment. And so I've been using a little portable fan to keep the area dry when I'm air drying after every single dilation. And that's been helping me a little bit, because if you do have moisture, you end up getting something called fibrin, which is a really gross, gooey.
You get it. Now, these are two female to male transitioners talking about how long recovery actually took. And understand, if you do this once, you need surgeries often. It is very, very, very rare that you do this to yourself one time and you're done.
So Matthias asked about phalloplasty. So recovery? I was back at work 8 weeks, 9 weeks maybe. I was still like in my penis diaper, penis cloud.
Really?
It was still at 90 degrees. Like, I had a boner at work, which I don't recommend. So I wore my fanny pack, like, to the side of it, and, like, I had a sweatshirt, and I would wrap that around, so, like, I would have, like, the little arms of the sweatshirt. So I had all these things that would, like, kind of blend in and disguise the fact that like there's like a bulge. So yeah, I was back at work maybe like 8 or 9 weeks. I did not fully recover, like get my testosterone levels back, like back at the gym, not feeling like shit till like after my second surgery, like maybe a month or two after is when I started to really have an upswing. Mm-hmm. So that was at the like 7 months, 6-7 months before I started to really fully recover. I had other stuff going on, but yeah, 6-7 months isn't too bad, so I'm not complaining either.
Okay. Now, for a year before you have this surgery, by the military standards, you need to be on hormone therapy. And I want to show you that that is not some easy thing you just do and you're fine and you can serve in the military. This person in particular.
Hey, what's up? My name is Cade, and today I'm doing this really fun collab with my buddy, Jesse. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Jesse Diamond. I'm also a trans man. I had 2 bottom surgeries last year. Yes. And this year. I do like powerlifting and bodybuilding and stuff, make OnlyFans content, whatever.
I went ahead and asked in my community tab a few days ago what questions you had for both of us. So let's get right to those questions.
Bodhi Sassaras asked what my favorite muscle group to train was and where I started seeing progress at the start of my transitioning with working out. My favorite muscle group to train is chest. I really like barbell bench press. I'm getting into equipped powerlifting and I'm just going to try and compete in just the bench press. Just like the way it feels. I got into that because, you know, chest dysphoria, wanting to, you know, make my chest look different after top surgery, even though I liked my top surgery resulting.
This person had their breasts removed and says they still suffered from dysphoria after their breasts were removed, so they decided to become a power lifter so that they could make their chest look different again. You tell me out there in the audience what the problem is here. Is it really that this person feels like they were meant to be a man? Or is there a much deeper seated issue here?
Then wasn't totally comfortable, wanted to change more. Where did I start to see most progress? When I started my transition, I dropped, I think, like 20 pounds the first 2 months on T.
Really?
I was biking a lot, and I had just, like, gotten certified in training. So I was, like, doing group fitness classes and biking everywhere, and my metabolism was like, ooh, fast. I mean, my deadlifts got better. I guess that during the start of my transition, that's only other progress.
And your chest honestly looks amazing. Like, I really respect it.
Okay. This is a Q&A with a male to female transitioner where they talk about the requirements that insurance companies outside of the military require to fund this surgery. And I want you to listen to how they talk about it so that you understand the culture here of these doctors handing out these letters to people so that they can go ahead and do this to themselves.
For a bit now, and I noticed I need like 2 recommendation letters to go under surgery. I've never really spoken to a therapist about gender dysphoria. I was wondering if you had any recommendations on what I should do or any advice. Thank you. I mean, the first thing I would say to you is to get into therapy. I think everybody needs therapy, and you know, I've benefited from it so much. And as a trans person, it's very, very important that you have someone to talk to about your journey into womanhood. You know what I mean? Arguably even more important than that, places require letters from a psychiatrist. Sometimes the letters can be from a psychiatrist or a therapist, a primary care, an endocrinologist, or a combination of all of those things. So find out from whatever surgeon you're looking at what exactly they require. I would say number one is to just start therapy, because if you've already been living as your authentic self for a while, if you meet a therapist, they can meet you for just a little bit and be like, okay, well, obviously this person is a woman, and you know what I mean? And
they'll meet you for just a little bit. They'll miss you. They'll meet you for a few minutes, see you're living as a man or a woman because of the way you're dressed, and write you a letter so that you can chop your genitals up. and the insurance can pay for it.
Be able to sign off on something. So I would say also, it seems like you've already done your research on requirements for surgery, but either contact directly your surgeon or look on their website to see what exactly they require. Look at what your insurance requires, because that's really what comes down to needing the letters. So
it's not to make sure that you're not making this decision to mutilate your body because there's something deeper seated wrong with you. It's so that your insurance can check off a box. And here is more about the support system that you need in place when you go through this procedure that the military is paying for you to have. This is a minimum requirement.
Yourself into. While you're preparing, it's important that you prepare a support system for yourself at home. Whether it is your family, your friends, a loved one, it is so, so important that during this time, you have people to check up on you, make sure that they're supporting you, they love you, because this is a very tough time. You're going to want people to take care of you or at least just keep you company, because it can get very lonely. Even when I was living at home and recovering, I had my family with me, but it was still kind of lonely because I just had to lie in my room all the time. And you know, it can get very tough. So you want to make sure you have a good support system, not just with friends and family, but also a licensed therapist. Most surgeons, if not all, require.
Okay.
Yourself into.
So now we're going to talk about some of what these doctors are telling their patients they need. And I know this is hard. This is hard. I said this show will change you. I wasn't kidding. It changed me. This work changed me. I never realized any of the things that we'll do in conclusion at the end. And I think that we need to discuss it briefly before we move on today. Here is a Dr. Adam Bonington from San Francisco. Doctor.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Adam Bonington, and I'm a gender-affirming surgeon here in San Francisco, California. One of the things our clinic requires after vaginoplasty surgery is that you have a support person with you for the first 3 weeks of recovery. This person doesn't need to have any medical training. They're going to mostly be doing things like help you get around, change your sheets, make you food, helping you keep your medications organized. Think of it like a really bad flu, where you just need a little bit of extra TLC and comfort.
Think of it like a really bad flu, but yet these same people, he says, think of it like a really bad flu. We just created a wound in between your legs and removed your penis and or added one to you using the tissue already there. Think of it like a bad flu. This person goes on to say you need someone there with you for a long time.
The person needs to be there during the day and the night, and there can be different people who come to support you. We just don't want any breaks in that chain of support. The reason we require a support person is because this is obviously a really big surgery with a really big recovery. And even if you think you can handle it all on your own, there may be unexpected things that come up that need an extra set of hands. And if there's an emergency, the support person can help get in contact with our team. We know it can be a lot to ask of someone, especially if you're not from the Bay Area, but we have really found it to be such an important and vital part of the recovery process.
So they have to basically live near the surgery center for at least a month, sometimes two. This is the recovery times for the surgery. Remember the 6 to 8 weeks?
My name is Dr. Adam Bonington, and I'm a gender surgeon in San Francisco, California. I want to talk about vaginal tightening after vaginoplasty surgery. About 2 to 3 months after surgery, the vagina will go through a tightening phase as part of normal healing for most patients. Usually this is temporary and just lasts a couple of weeks, and patients can work through it by either going down a size on their dilator temporarily or perhaps dilating more often. If this tightening phase is more persistent, then it's helpful to get a pelvic floor physical therapist involved. They can assess if this is tight scar tissue or tight pelvic floor muscles and work to loosen this area. Sometimes these therapists need a referral from a patient's primary care provider, and that referral process can take a really long time. So it's great to get that started as soon as it looks like the issue is going to be persistent and is not getting better on it.
Active duty? Really? There are challenges with follow-ups and potential issues. And here is somebody who transitioned who actually gives an honest assessment of how long the basic full and total recovery takes for somebody who goes through this.
Thank you for asking so respectfully. So let's get into the ins and the outs of recovery after a vaginoplasty, which is bottom surgery for a trans feminine person. Typically, you'll have to lay in the hospital in bed for about a week. So that's usually not even walking. You'll be peeing through a catheter and you'll mostly be on a liquid diet. After that week, then you get that catheter out. You get the packing, which is in the hole to prevent it from closing. You get that taken out and then you have to dilate. Dilate is essentially putting up a tool into that hole to prevent it from closing. And you'll have to do this starting up to 3 times a day or more the first couple of weeks, and it slowly gets less frequently as time goes on, but you will have to do this for the rest of your life. Later on, after about 4 to 6 months, then you can start having fun with it, and that counts as dilating as well. For a full and total recovery, it typically takes up to a year to a year and a half.
So half of their time is spent in recovery from the surgery before they could even begin to dream about being deployable or being deployed anywhere or even serving. Tax dollars. And now it gets very sad, if it wasn't sad already. Listen.
Really open about everything. There's some things that you are never gonna share. It's going to be really hard for me to talk about this. First of all, that's like my biggest fear. I never ever wanted this to happen. So I've never had a big surgery like this before. And that was like kind of the first time where I was gonna see how my body heals and how my body reacts. I was never gonna talk about it. And I feel like it's important for me to share because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that feel the same way and are going through the same thing. When I got the surgery, I was happier than ever. As you guys know, I saw it for the first time and it was not pretty, and that's completely normal. My body healed in a way where everything healed so fast and my body wants to heal constantly. The visual is not really how I wanted it to be. I am going to say that I am getting a second surgery. I'm just very unhappy with the results, and that is not my surgeon's fault at all, because, well, first of all, I've had some friends that have gone to her and the results are great, and my body, it's, as I said, it's the first time that I've seen how my body heals. So I'm getting the second surgery. I made that decision when I got out of surgery. I was really happy to like lose that private area that wasn't part of me at all. I was completely happy. I was going on a trip with my friend and she had done the surgery, I think, after me. So she was a couple months post-op. She had it way easier than me. I've had complications and I've had a hard time. And look-wise, I knew that I wasn't completely happy. We ordered a hotel room and we were there together. And we would dilate together. When I removed my underwear and she looked at it and she was like, "I'm so sorry." That's when I like realized it should not be this way.
And this person is not alone. But listen to this.
I'm having the worst time with dilation. Like, I've talked about dilation before on my channel, and I feel like I haven't shown really how I feel and how I haven't shown how much trouble I'm having I don't know what to do. My friends that had the surgery at the same time as me, they're dilating like once every 3 days. And I am dilating twice a day. I've said that in my last video, but the reason I'm dilating twice a day is because if I miss once, it is so painful. And I feel like I'm stuck and like I have to do it or else like I'm gonna have the worst time like the next morning or like if I go out and I come back like at 4 a.m. I'm gonna go to sleep and I'm not gonna dilate. But then the next morning when I wake up, I like dread it so much because it's so painful because it's like so tight. I haven't really talked about this with my surgeon before face to face, which now we have like scheduled something. I don't know if it's my body that is healing so fast that it's
the fact that they keep saying healing so fast should be the first red flag for you. You're not supposed to have that there. This is criminal. It goes on. Here's another one. We're going through this together because we have to talk about it at the end. I feel like we have to, and we're going to, and I'm sorry, but I can't do a piece like this and ignore this portion of it. I just can't. Here.
Important to this story is that my psychologist at the hospital, she actually recommended to me that I stay at an MPU. Basically, I'm gonna sound crazy, but it's basically a medical psychiatric unit, I think, because I have like some mental health history. And she was like, this surgery is very like intense mentally. In that department, they just have like a little more attention for you during your recovery and during your stay there, which meant that my waiting period was a little longer.
Important to clearly this person has serious mental issues and her doctor's recommending psychiatric care while she waits for her surgery, or he waits for his surgery, I should say. They went offline for a year after that video and came back with this.
So my surgery is almost a year ago. My coochie is almost a year old. Boy, has she been through a lot. Oh, where do I freaking start? I guess I could talk about why I stopped making videos when I did. I looked forward to my surgery for a very, very long time. It was honestly my only life goal for a really long time. Like, obviously I have school, music, whatever, but that was really important to me to get that done, and that was really just like a huge goal that kept me going for quite a while. I just want to say I went into the surgery, I think, still pretty well prepared. I don't think I could have or should have done more research, because I would have gotten it anyway. But it was hard. It was really, really hard. I mean, I guess I talked about it a little bit in my last video. Now, a year later, I can say that I stand by my choice and I'm happy I did it. After my surgery, I fell into a very, very deep depression. The reason that I'm saying this is maybe there's like one viewer of mine that is trans, that is recovering from a surgery right now. But especially this kind of surgery, it's very invasive. It requires a lot of maintenance. Still doing dilation 2 times a day. And honestly, the first 6 months, I kind of regretted it. Not kind of, I really regretted it. The first 6 months, I thought, what the fuck did I get myself into? What also didn't help, after my surgery, I was supposed to go do a, I don't know what it's called in English, minor studies for a half a year, but I had to postpone it from September to January because I was recovering from surgery and I couldn't freaking travel like an hour and a half to an hour and a half from school. Like, I couldn't do that. I don't think this is something that a lot of trans people like to talk about, but like, whether you get the surgery or not, the issues that you have with being trans, it doesn't like magically solve it. And I didn't expect it to, but I kind of hoped it would. Also, for the first 6 months, it takes a long time to see your end result. And I mean a long time. That being said, my recovery also didn't go completely smoothly. That is something that I didn't want to talk about.
And here is where the real problem begins, outside of the fact that these people will never be deployable. And we're paying for this, and we'll be paying for it forever. There is a cultural problem here. You've heard almost every single one of these folks who have had a hard time with their surgery, which is a lot of them, say that they can't talk about it. And the reason for that is, if you go to any detransitioner and you see what they endure, these people are rabid and weaponized, and there's a root cause for this. But this is something that I really wanted to point out at the end of my thread here, and that is this. This is a transgender influencer who had surgery about a decade ago. This is a video they put up 3 years ago on the myths about bottom surgery. Let's watch this.
On my channel, and today I am going to debunk some myths and misconceptions about the bottom surgery, the gender reassignment surgery, the SRS. It has many names, and I have actually done a video like this before, but it's like 1.5 years old and it was really, really, really bad. So watch this video instead, because it's better, hopefully. But before we get into this video, don't forget to follow me on my socials. They're all down below, TikTok, Instagram, whatever. And also, don't forget to hit that subscribe button. It's also down below. You really help a girly out. And also, please hit the little bell icon to get future notifications whenever I post. Now, you know, click it. Thank you. But now, let's get into this video. I have all of the myths or misconceptions, whatever you want to call them, here on my phone. And the first myth is, it's an open wound. It will never heal and you will have to dilate forever to keep it open. Okay, so this is an incredibly common myth. It's the falseness for me. No, I'm kidding. But honestly, this is an incredibly common misconception. It's not an open wound. I mean, it's in the beginning, obviously, because you've had a surgery. So in the beginning, it is an open wound. However, it heals like just in a few days. Then it's all healed, and then it's fine. And you will not have to dilate forever. If you're not sure what dilation means in the beginning or in the first few years after your bottom surgery, you will have to insert an object into your vag.
Okay, so here, 247,000 views later, after what we've witnessed, this person has told everyone that it heals in a few days. And then they did another one on May 10th of 2022, where they're also getting likes and views.
Welcome back, or welcome if you're new. My name is Matilda, obviously, and hi, I hope you're having a bit of a great day. I am. I actually am. Like, the sun is shining, the birds are chirping. Is that what they say? Anyways, today I'm going to do myths and misconceptions about the bottom surgery. I have done two. two, not four. I have done two of these videos before. You can see it here. But today I'm going to do another one because I still see a lot of myths and misconceptions going around about the bottom surgery, the SRS, the gender confirmation surgery, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, that is what this video will be all about. So buckle. But now let's get into the myths and misconceptions about bottom surgery. And the first myth about bottom surgery is it's just a hole. Which is just like, what? What? Ew. No, it's a vagina. It has all of the parts that a vulva has, which is what the outside of a vagina is called, a vulva. So yeah, it has a vagina. Flora and everything that goes with, you know, all of the parts. It looks like a vagina because it is a vagina. So yeah, I don't know who came up with this myth, but it's just like, wow, that's not true. It is a vagina. It looks like one. I know we're all different. Everyone looks different, but it is a vagina and it looks like one.
There is no education about what an actual vagina is or what parts there are of it clearly before this surgery, because this person has no idea that there are more parts to a vagina than a vulva. And here is the sad reality, guys. Last year, the same person who was basically advocating for this surgery for everybody had this to say. And listen to the timeline that they talk about, because he is talking about this happening during the time that he's sitting there on the screen making videos telling people that there are no truth to the myths.
A commitment for a life. You're going to have to rely on doctors for the rest of your life. Hi everyone. Hi, I hope you're having a super duper great day. I haven't been on here for a while. So happy New Year's, Merry Christmas and everything like that. I just needed some time away, some time to relax, but I am back. As you can see in the title, there's a lot to unpack in this video. So I'm just going to get started right away. 2 months, 2.5, 3 months. I'm not entirely sure on the timeline, but around that time I had my second SRS revision surgery. And for those who aren't aware, the SRS, the gender reassignment surgery, is the bottom surgery. Since I am a trans woman and I transitioned 10 years ago, and a few months ago, as I said, I had my second SRS revision. But basically what happened, I started having issues urinating. And it was like this whole ordeal, and it was painful, and I kind of had this problem for a year, and then I had a surgery to get better, and that surgery, as I said, I had 2 months ago. And since that revision, I haven't really been on here a lot and talked about it, so I'm basically going to tell you everything about the issue for me, or issues or complications and everything that kind of comes with having this surgery. But before we get into this video further, I just want to let you know that this video, I had my SRS 10 years ago, and then the months after that, I had a few complications, bleedings, infections, and just things that they kind of warn you about with that kind of surgery. And I mean, the complications wasn't that severe. I mean, there are complications that are like incredibly severe and that like completely wrecks your life. That didn't really happen to me. I'm very glad that that didn't happen, and I'm very happy that I had the surgery.
All of them say the same thing. They all say, I'm very happy I had the surgery. It could have been much worse. Thank goodness it wasn't for me. I, just looking at this person who spent video after video after video telling people how all the myths that he experienced were not real. And because of a few reasons. One, mental instability. Two, fear. Three, I'm sitting here after this experience that I've had, and I know it's not the same for all of you guys. You've just had to sit through it for an hour. And I don't wish it on my worst enemy, truthfully, because I have so much. I moved through some stages here with this. I started out angry. Then I was very judgmental. And now I'm not judgmental anymore. I feel sorrow. And I feel terrible that these people don't love themselves and that they think that they will be able to chop and massacre their body, and then all of a sudden they will and they don't. And it causes them a lifetime worth of problems afterwards. And I'm sitting here, how do we fix this? The government is promoting it because they're purposefully trying to destabilize the country and the world for many different reasons, which we can get into. The people involved are not okay. They're not. And a lot of them will tell you that. The solution to this has naturally evolved to us hating each other, screaming, yelling. You know, when it comes to the kids, that's an entirely different scenario, but we're dealing with adults here. So we scream and yell and fight and argue amongst each other constantly instead of stopping for a minute and trying to love these people. And I know that all of you out there probably have a different perspective on this, but the only answer to fix this is more love. There's no other answer. There was a clip of a woman going around on social media the other day, and she's like, I know I'm ugly. Can someone please help me to not be ugly anymore? I'm going to find it. Bear with me a second. Hold on. The answer to all of this is more God, not less. More love. Shining your light brighter for everybody to see. Smiling at people more. Hugging people more. Being the light that you are more. More God, less hate. More God, more love, less anger. Here, listen. Listen.
Since everybody's talking about my looks and how I'm ugly and everything, teach me how to do foundation. Teach me how to do contour. Highlight. Teach me how to do that stuff, please. So I can be beautiful. I want to be pretty. I really do. I want to be pretty. But I don't know how to do makeup. So, teach me. Help me. If I'm so ugly, please. I just want to be beautiful. I want to be pretty. I know it's not going to happen, but I can't do makeup that good, and I want to be pretty, so if you got a problem with it, teach me how to do it.
Makeup. The problem isn't makeup. No amount of makeup in the world will make someone who is so lost feel pretty again. That has to come from somewhere else. And if it's not our job on this earth right now to be a part of that change, I don't know why we're here. That doesn't mean that you have to dispose of all your feelings surrounding the trans insanity. It just means that we need to recognize for adults who are going through this, they probably had a lot of really horrible things happen to them as children. And we need to break that trend, first of all. We need to take responsibility as parents to love our kids. We need to teach every human being that they're valuable. I know this sounds crazy, but I have come to this realization over the past, just been reaffirmed for me over the past week or two in learning about all this. We need to be better. We need to shine brighter. We need to be the light. Because we have God in our hearts. And these people need God badly. And I feel like we have to be the ones to bring God to them. Because that's why we're here. That's why we're here. I know this was a rough show, guys. Thanks for listening and watching if you stuck it out. I'll be back on Friday with Frank for Freaky Fun Friday. You've been listening to the Dark to Light podcast. You can see us streaming live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 8:30 Eastern Time on Rumble, X, and on Getter. Your task for today, if you choose to accept it, is to go out and shine your love and your light in this world brighter than you ever have before. Even if it's just for 5 minutes. And every day you should try and do the same thing. Because that's the only thing that's going to beat all this down. Is more light and more love from us. I'll see you guys on Friday. God bless.